From the Department of Surgery at the University of Wisconsin, welcome to The Surgery Set. I'm Jonathan Kohler, an assistant professor in pediatric surgery here in Madison. I'm new here, and with this podcast, I'm exploring the ideas, inventions, and innovations of our department, plus meeting a lot of really interesting people. I'm excited for you to join me.
Hi, everyone. I'm Angela Ingraham, a trauma and acute care surgeon at the University of Wisconsin. I'm very excited to guest host this episode of The Surgery Set. Our guest today is Dr. Pauline Chen, a respected physician, best-selling author, and New York Times columnist. In addition to writing, Dr. Chen sees patients in the VA Boston healthcare system. Her work as a doctor spans a number of challenging issues affecting healthcare, end-of-life care, access to care, workforce issues, and the education and training of future doctors. Dr. Chen, welcome to the Surgery Set podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So Dr. Chen, I'd like to start by asking you, what prompted you to shift your career to more of a focus on journalism or stories? You related in your lecture today about a story of a patient that you had that prompted you to investigate and to identify the importance of end-of-life care decisions. But I was wondering how that changed your surgical and career focus.
It's interesting because I've always been drawn to writing since I was a little girl. But once I started surgical training, that was all I focused on. There wasn't time to write. There wasn't time to eat or sleep oftentimes. But toward the end of my training in my fellowship, I found myself drawn again to writing. And it was often like in the form of a letter. I'd start a letter and it would just go on and on and on. And when I finished my fellowship, this writing increased. And again, I would find myself in my lab writing or, you know, in the locker room getting ready for case and pulling out a piece of paper and writing. And it got a little unwieldy. And so I decided that I needed to do something about it to sort of control these impulses. And I took a couple of writing courses at UCLA, where I was on staff at the time. And the courses were wonderful. And midway through one of the courses, the instructor, it's interesting because I was still such a, I guess, a medical student at heart. But midway through one of the courses, the teacher said to me, "Pauline, I need to talk to you." And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble because I've, you know, skipped classes for transplants or whatever. But she took me aside and she said, "You know, I think you need to do something with this writing. You have something to say." So at that point, I began to write in a much more organized way instead of on pieces of paper all over the place. And I think about it that it was like a puzzle that, you know, when you're doing a big jigsaw puzzle, you usually do the outsides, the borders first. Mm-hmm. And I found that as I organized my writing, that a picture was starting to form, you know, first the border and then the inside. And I found that what I was often writing about, and it's interesting because I had initially wrote more fiction type things, but what I was really writing about was grief over how I had cared for patients who were dying, grief over what I had become compared to what I had started out as. And that, as I wrote, I became more and more interested in end-of-life care in general because I wanted to do the research behind it to understand why we got here and what was being done about it. After the book was published, I was a little nervous because I thought, you know, this was when palliative care was just becoming a specialty. And I was a little bit nervous about, so how are these palliative care experts going to welcome me, you know, some interloper here? But it was amazing. They were so welcoming. And I discovered through writing and research that there were other surgeons that were interested in it and were doing things. And so it's been a really amazing experience to sort of go from that and to watch end-of-life care and palliative care grow and become stronger and take its rightful place, I think, in healthcare and in our specialty. In terms of the writing, I also, as I mentioned earlier, I used to do translational research. And I have always, I think, been interested in, I guess, translating things, seeing how things go from not necessarily obviously comprehensible to one group, and sort of the process of making it usable or comprehensible or whatever. And so I became sort of interested in that. And at some point, my editor at the Times contacted me and said, are you interested in writing something for us regularly? And I've always been a big New York Times fan, so I said, sure. In fact, it was funny, the weekend before he called, I was in Los Angeles, and I had walked like a mile to get my Sunday New York Times. So I told him that, and I think that clinched the job for me.
That's great. So what was the biggest challenge in having that career kind of focus or that career shift, and how did you overcome it?
I think the biggest challenge was, so as surgeons, we're trained to give 100%, if not more, in what we do. I'm not a very good multitasker. I tend to be very focused. And I think it was very hard to sort of use a different side of my brain that I was not used to using at the same time wanting to stay connected with patients. I found that difficult, and I still find it difficult sometimes, actually. So when I go to write my notes, I find that I have to shift. And it goes from the very basic. So there is, in medicine, we write a lot in the passive voice, and you're not supposed to write in the passive voice, you know, when you write for the general public. And so I find myself switching back and forth, and then I say, oh, forget it, I'll just. So some of my notes look kind of funny, I think. And I think sometimes my editor says, well, you know, Pauline, change this voice. It's all in the passive voice. So, but it was difficult. It was difficult giving up laboratory work. Mm-hmm. I really loved that. And it was difficult cutting back on my clinical work. Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of people who go into academic medicine find that you go from this full-on clinical life as a resident mm-hmm. to suddenly you're 20% clinical time,
right,
or
right.
And it's a very difficult thing because there is an unmistakable, incredible sense of satisfaction you get from taking care of patients and from being immersed in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, as much as anything, sort of shifting gears was very difficult.
Right.
And so it's that shift. So I think that when I talk to my colleagues that are still doing basic science research
right.
or health services research mm-hmm. or whatever kind of research, you know, they talk about that. Like, yeah, I've got to sort of shift.
Right, yeah. Well, you still want to have that clinical experience because it helps to keep you respected by the, you know, your fellow surgeons. It gives you insight into your research and your work. And so that's still a very important part.
Right, and there is nothing like saving somebody or being there for them at the end of their life. And it's an incredible privilege what we do clinically. So it's very difficult to cut back on that.
Right.
It's very difficult.
Right.
My husband and children laugh every time I come back from clinical work or from the hospital. You know, I'm sort of on this kind of buzz. And so
I think we have time for one final question. So as a young attending surgeon, other than modeling for residents through palliative care discussions, how can I encourage my residents to learn and engage in these discussions and in this field when they're so pressed for time, when we have this limited 80-hour work week, there are demands on their education, and this is such a time-intensive subject?
Right. I think that the limited time is incredibly difficult because we are, in essence, asking the youngest people in our profession to make really difficult decisions. You know, I think they're moral decisions in many ways from the start of their career. Like, do you go back and talk to Mr. Smith about his terminal diagnosis? You know, do you go back and end up putting your residency program at risk? So I think the time problem is a huge issue that's a challenge. That being said, I think the importance of modeling, it is so important. It is so, so important. I think it's really important to bring it up when you can, sort of to use the little spaces of time that we have. You know, just the fact that an attending brings it up as a possibility. I mean, that didn't occur when, you know, I was in training. I mean, that is something new. And the fact that so for me, growing up in an environment where it wasn't talked about, where the only words that we knew in terms of end-of-life care were DNR. For me, one example, and that's the powerful thing I think about being a teacher or an attending, you never know when that example happens, mm-hmm. but it can change someone's life. So that one example of that one surgeon taking care of his patient who was dying and that patient's wife differently than anything I had ever seen before, that blew my mind. And I never forgot it. You know, it's been years and I still don't forget it. And I think it's similar to what we call in surgery your index case. We all have index cases. So I think being cognizant that anything you do during the day could be that index case for your resident. And so it's so powerful that I think we need to acknowledge it and to remember it and to embrace it, because even just, and I put the just in quotes, you know, bringing it up in discussion, that's huge, because that creates the culture in which our next generation grows up. And if that culture says that this is what you do, this is how you approach patients at the end of life, that's huge. Yeah. It's a huge cultural shift.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very, very much for your time. Thank you for coming to the University of Wisconsin. And we look forward to continuing to read your work in the New York Times and other publications.
Thank you. It's an honor.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Join us next time when we talk with Dr. Amber Shada. She's an assistant professor at UW-Madison in the Division of Minimally Invasive Surgery and discusses her work in endoscopic surgery and the future of this exciting approach. The Surgery Set is a production of the Department of Surgery at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. This episode was produced by Rebecca Wazileski and myself. It was audio engineered by Chris Hansen and edited by Alex Worley. Our theme song is On Wisconsin, arranged and produced by Jamie Schmidt. I encourage you to visit us at surgery.wisc.edu, where you can find links to Grand Rounds, free CME credits, and more. You can also check out the UW School of Medicine and Public Health Video Library for a wide range of medical education resources at videos.med.wisc.edu. In addition, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. And of course, you can follow us on social media. You can like our Facebook page and also find us on Twitter at Wisc Surgery, as well as me at J.E. Kohler. Please feel free to let us know how we're doing, and especially let us know if there are topics you'd like us to cover. Thanks, and we hope you check back soon. On Wisconsin.